Hello.
What's up, Jenna?
How are you?
I'm doing good.
Welcome to the Atheist Experience. And I just want to let y'all know that we are a 501c3 nonprofit organization dedicated to the separation of church and religion, of church and state. We have some fundraisers going on where if you click on the link that's above the chat here in YouTube, then you can make a donation that will go through YouTube, and 100% of the proceeds go directly to the ACA, so you can donate that way. You can also support us by buying some merchandise. We have t-shirts, we have mugs, we have sweatshirts and stickers, and you can use that little link there, that bit.ly/AENmerch, and you can buy some stuff and rock it. Then we've also got some Facebook fan groups. We've got the Atheist Experience general group where you can go and you can talk about philosophy. You can talk about religion. You can talk about anything that you've got on your mind. And then we also have a private fan group where it doesn't show up in your it doesn't show your posts to your newsfeed, and it's private. So you don't have to be out as an atheist. Also, don't want to forget, we have an amazing group of people that are helping. It's not just the faces you see. It's everybody behind the scenes. We have an amazing crew. We've got a couple crew cats.
Cats. No dogs represented there.
No dogs yet. Well, I'm sure it won't take long.
There's probably a few on the floor or something.
Right. And welcome, Anthony. How are you?
I'm good, Jenna. Thanks for having me back. I think this is our second time together on AXP.
Yes.
Not our first time working together, but I think our second time on AXP.
No, I think we both have a very similar interest in our approach to how to talk about these things. And so I really like your SE, and I like to promote it every chance that I get. So please feel free to talk all about it. What do you want to tell us?
Okay, well, I guess for the last several years, I've been doing something called street epistemology, which is a way of engaging with somebody where you're not arguing and debating with them or ridiculing them. It's a way of actually encouraging them to explain how they concluded that their view is factually true in a way that kind of opens them up and reduces defenses and is kind of coming from a place of honesty and really trying to figure out what's really going on here. Is this really true? And it's kind of been picking up. It's kind of been gaining some momentum. There's been a lot of communities that have been forming online and even local groups to practice this method around the world. This isn't just a U.S. thing either. This is what's been really exciting to see, is that there are groups forming around the world or people with varying degrees of interest in learning this method and not only exploring claims about gods, but all different types of claims. One of the most exciting things I heard recently was that there was a theist that encountered somebody using street epistemology with them. And later on, the theist thanked them for the conversation, I think, and said that I'm now using this tool to engage with other people on different claims that they make. That is very exciting to me when I hear that. And I'm a huge proponent of this method. I certainly didn't create it, but I've tried to be a developer, practitioner, promoter of it for the last several years. And I think we've come a tremendous way since it was first developed several years ago. And I'm excited to see where it goes next. Maybe somebody who's watching today will be the next person that brings SE further along. And I'm excited to see it grow and get better than where it's at even today.
Well, I know that it helped me move very, very quickly through my angry atheist phase. And I actually reached out to you. I was like, yeah, I think I can do this. This is going to be really helpful to me. I think I know what you're doing. And there's kind of a strategy to it, you know, the way that you kind of ask questions. And at first, I resisted the way that you would approach it, sometimes telling people in advance that the way that you're asking questions may alter their mindset a little bit. And I kind of resented that at first because I was like, well, but that kind of gives me the impression that it's manipulative. But acknowledging that makes it, I think, less manipulative.
I think so. I that was a big criticism. So we're developing this thing that seems to be improving conversation on difficult topics where people tend to have better clarity on their views and the quality of their reasons. But yeah, sometimes we get feedback from people who say, like, you should tell them where you stand on that claim, or you should at least prepare them for what they're in for, which I find a little humorous because we don't do that with any engagement with a person. We don't normally do that. But people are thinking that we should be doing that with this approach, which makes me think that there is something unique and special about it. And we probably do have an obligation to give people a heads up. It's not like they're, like, if I'm engaging with somebody on the street, I'm usually flagging down a stranger who has no idea about what they're in for. So yeah, I think I do agree that we probably have an obligation to be as transparent as possible and maybe even warn people, like, I'm going to ask you some challenging questions here. It might cause you to think about your view. You might even change your mind. You can lay it all out there. And I guess the more that you, there's a risk there, of course, because the more that you lay out, the more you can alarm the person and men raise defenses. But I think that's a fair trade-off. I'd rather have a slightly defensive conversation partner and them also being more informed about what they're getting into. That's something that we didn't do 5 years ago, though. Like, that, this is something that we've been developing because of feedback from people who are watching these engagements.
Right. And that's not something that we necessarily need to do here as much today, because we're on a show and people are calling us. But I just wanted to mention that because I do think that that's an important point.
It's kind of implied. However, there have been times where I've been on this show or like Truth Wanted, and where I think some callers have been put up to calling in that. And I've seen it actually when I'm not on. This happens. Mm. Sometimes I think some callers don't know what they're getting into.
That's true. That's
and if
true.
If we encounter some callers like that, I'd like to just give them a heads up.
I'm totally okay with that.
But I think for the most part, we'll probably get callers who know what's going on.
Okay. Well, speaking of callers, we have someone who's questioning. We have Mark, and it says that prophecies are keeping you holding on to religious beliefs. So we'd like to give you the chance to explain your position a little bit, Mark. You're on with Jenna and Anthony.
Welcome, Mark.
Hello, Jenna and Anthony. How are you?
Doing all right.
Hello.
Doing good.
Can you explain what these prophecies are doing to your religious beliefs? What's going on?
Yeah, let's say so. What I said to the guy that I spoke on the phone before the show. I hope I put the message out there to him. But that's basically what I said, yes. I heard a show earlier, maybe a year or so, with Matt, when a guy was mentioning those kind of things, and it kind of was intriguing to me. And Matt, of course, didn't have as much time to address all of them, but some of them were intriguing to me, and I was not completely satisfied with Matt's answers. Mostly as, but not completely. There were some predictions on those holy books, whatever they call them. For example...
Well, Matt's not here today. Today you've got Jenna and Anthony, so...
And what might actually be helpful, too, is can you tell us what a prophecy is? What is your definition of that word so we're all on the same page?
Let's better say, like, predictions. I don't know if they were prophecies, but yeah, you can call them, I guess, prophecies. I'm not an expert. I was the thing that I said, I was hoping that Matt would be on the show because I know that he read Quran and Bible. I know that you, Jenna, once said that you did not read the Quran, but you did the Bible. I don't know about the Anthony, but doesn't matter. Anyways, like predictions, for example, that always with the question, like, did the Quran or Bible predict something that science hasn't found yet? And there were a couple of those predictions made on the books that the guy mentioned, and I found those things on the books. But I guess they can be interpreted differently. But one of them was like specific, where it says that the sun will rise on the west. And scientists, just like I think lately, when I say lately, maybe like last 20 years or so, they came with theory as such that the sun actually one day will rise on the west instead of the east. And if I confuse those two west and east, because I'm not American, English is not my language again. And one of them is this. So could you guys like explain to me like how did they come up with that, or did they actually know that, or maybe they just came from their imagination? So I got like 10 prophecies like that, but science.
We don't need to go through all 10. I'd actually prefer if we keep this kind of high level. And I do notice that your line is kind of staticky. So if there's anything that you can do to shore that up, that would be great. But we'll talk for a little bit and then maybe you can kind of resolve that. But prophecies, you're calling predictions. Here's what I'm wondering. Are there particular books that you read that have prophecies that make you or convince you more that is true? So for example, you mentioned the Bible and the Quran. If you were to discover other prophecies in other books, would you be equally as wondering about them?
No, because to be honest, I'm programmed to believe in those two books, you know, because of the culture and stuff. And so those two books might seem to me more convincing. So that's
right.
I actually call it.
Okay, cool. I like this idea of, I'm really glad that we defined what a prophecy is, and it's a prediction. Here's what I'm wondering though, like how much of a factor, because when I read your description of the call, it sounded like this was one of the last things that's keeping you into the belief. Is that a fair representation? Or is this like the most convincing thing that's letting you still think that this is factually true, that God is real?
Not in the sense of like godlike figure, but maybe that somehow they had knowledge about science more than we give them credit for. And I don't exactly understand back in the time where could they have gathered this information or knowledge. So I go to this what's usually faced, say like, oh, how would they have known and stuff like that, you know. I know it sounds ridiculous when I say that, but that's
how could you verify that? How could you find out if they did actually know?
I have no clue. Neither way, that they did or they did not know. You just those like around 10 predictions that I read seem to me kind of, you know, intriguing. I'm not saying
so
that.
I'm curious what it is that these prophecies have you convinced of exactly. I don't want to assume a certain religion or anything. I'm curious, what is it that these prophecies have you convinced of?
I'm not convinced of. They just seem that they predicted them and they spoke about them like even hundreds of years. Like kind of explicitly, like they were like clear, not like those other predictions that you can like you can translate them differently, or you can talk about them and go around them. Those were like kind of explicit, let's say, like sun is gonna
rise
in the west, and then science come up with it. Yeah,
so you have some prophecies that you found in the Quran or in the Bible and found that they may have been true. So what does that mean?
I don't know. I'm out of it almost. I'm just, that is kind of keeping me still there. Like, you know, maybe, you know, like maybe they did, maybe they did not know.
But I'm curious what there is. When you say keeping you still there, what does still there mean? Still where? Where are you?
Kind of making me wonder, maybe am I rushing out of this, or have I been programmed to stay in it, that maybe I'm finding fault in all the things and trying to give them credit for whatever they have, something like that. Mm. Or sometimes I think maybe they had some sort of idea, at least. It doesn't have to be, you know, Elohim, God or whatever. Just maybe they had some sort of scientific method, or maybe they were deep thinkers or philosophers that...
I can understand this. I can understand this feeling or this thought that, you know, when you read something in a book that is a prediction and it appears to happen, that must mean that everything else in the book is true. However, I find myself resisting that temptation to make that leap, because when I look at prophecies or predictions, in my view, the more specific they are, probably the better. And now, I'm not an expert in prophecies, or I probably couldn't even name any, but my understanding is that that many of these holy books have predictions about things that will happen that are pretty general. They're not as specific as I would have preferred them to be. And the other thing too is humans, I think, could actively work to make certain things happen. So these predictions are laid out publicly for people to read and then look for, and maybe even try to work to make happen. Which makes me wonder, well, how the heck can that really lend any credence to the actual text if humans can observe these things and then actively work to make them happen in reality? So I would be worried that I would be drawing a conclusion by observing something like maybe there was a prediction and it came true. That's interesting, but it wouldn't be enough for me to say, okay, that's good enough for me to believe everything else that this book says, especially when I could look at a prophecy and say, that's pretty vague. Here's five things that I would have done to make it even better. but it's not there. Why isn't it there? And maybe even more importantly, why are people's standards different when it comes to looking at a prophecy or a prediction and then saying, oh, that there's really something there to it? I'd really like to kind of maybe explore, like, I don't want to get into the specifics of the prophecy, but I'd like to better understand, what is it about observing prophecies or predictions and then you then taking the next leap to, you haven't really said what you next do with that, but I am curious what you actually do. What goes through your mind when you read a prophecy and then it appears to have actually happened? Where's your brain taking you there?
I said prophecies, and I just realized that I said all of, there are some claims actually that not just prophecies, but explanations for natural causes and so on, like Big Bang, and that's not a prophecy. That's something that happened that explains.
We can expand it to claims.
Mountains being like, sorry.
Do you mind? No. Actually, it sounds like you have the show playing in the background. Do you mind muting that for us?
It could be. I don't know. I'm trying to move around the house, so.
Thank you.
Do you hear me now better? Is it better any better?
Yes, you're good.
The thing, when I read, when I hear old books that have talked about things that appear to be happening in reality, and then maybe even going so far as to make predictions or prophecies, I think it's really tempting, especially when somebody, you didn't go this far, but a lot of people want these beliefs to be true, and they're looking to make connections that make the book true to them, or it's good enough for them to say, that was a claim, that claim actually happens in reality. I can't imagine how somebody 2,000 years ago could have anticipated that that's actually what's happening, and we've confirmed it with science. Wow, there must be really something to this. It could be really tempting to draw those connections, but I'm of the perspective that we have to be really cautious and skeptical when it comes to linking these things together. Here's what I'm wondering. I'm wondering if you would find this compelling. If the three of us actually decided to sit down and write a book that made claims about things that we don't know the answers to yet, but we might in the next 10 or 15 years, like the best fuel mixture to get a probe to Mars or something along those lines. And maybe we even make predictions like this country will be the first country to put a person on Mars or something like that. But then we also included 10 other things that we just made up whole cloth. They're not even true. We used our imagination and we put some other stuff in there. If those predictions happened, would we be justified in concluding that the other 10 or 15 things that we made up were also true?
I understand what you're saying. I thought of all of those things pretty much. But the problem with all this actually could be of a different nature. Like it's like a hole that I believed for like majority of my life. And it seems like a graph, to be honest. It seems like, how do I feel that hole now and not feel like I wasted a good majority of my life believing in some nonsense?
You know what? Maybe if you don't look at it like you wasted it, but you looked at it as you had an experience that when you, it sounds to me like your belief is kind of loosening a little bit, like your understanding, correct me if I'm wrong, please, but it sounds to me like your understanding that it's not as true as.
You're right. And last two times that I called, I don't know if you remember, but I listened to myself and I saw lack of sincerity. I was saying, like, I read those books. Actually, I didn't read them. I read through them here and there. And when I took the Bible and read it from the beginning, I found some horrendous things, like, terrible. Like, you can beat your slave up. If he doesn't die in the next 2 days, you're free. You have nothing to do with him anyway. You don't get held up guilty and so on. And I was like, how the heck those guys don't bring those kind of things in the show to ask the believers, because I had no clue about that. Or maybe you guys did. I don't know.
What I'm wondering though, Mark, is you mentioned this commitment that you have to the believer that you had. It sounds like you're recognizing, like, you invested time and your identity into a view that you're starting to take another look at. And I think it's amazing that you are allowing yourself to question and maybe even doubt the things that you thought were true. That's how we grow. So kudos to you for doing that.
Yeah.
But sometimes there's this economic concept of a sunk cost. And I used to run a business and I put everything into it. And I would work 100 hours a week. And it was really hard for me to recognize that this business really wasn't going anywhere, because I had to face that that this concept that I wasn't living up to my own expectation. It was painful. So we can actually trick ourselves into maintaining views or not questioning them to the point where we start to let them loosen, let ourselves loosen our grips on those beliefs. And the fact that you recognize that you do, you mentioned like you were in the hole in it. Like, I think that's it's a great metaphor. Mm-hmm. The fact that you're recognizing that you might be overly committed to a belief that you necessarily can't back up at the moment is healthy. And here's the other thing. You could decide to set that belief on the back burner and revisit it later when there are other reasons that are better than predictions or claims that were made in a book 200 or 2000 years ago that appear to be matching reality today.
And back real quick to you saying that you feel like you've wasted time. That could be one way to look at it, but you could also look at it as you've been given the opportunity to experience truly believing in an entire world that may not exist, and then discovering that it may not exist. And I don't think that there are too many people in the world that actually have the opportunity to experience that. And now you have the opportunity to share what you've learned and to go out and do exactly what Anthony and I are doing and try to help other people through it.
Yeah, it seems to me, Mark, that you're recognizing that prophecy is not enough for you to maintain the belief.
Right.
That's the sense that I'm getting. And that's fine. Go find better reasons. And if you're unable to do that, you can just put this off to the back burner, like I said. But once you start interrogating the quality of the reasons for your belief, and you're starting to realize, these aren't good enough, because I could use this for any book, even a book that we made up together. Like that understanding is really, it's really good and it's really healthy, but it doesn't mean that the original claims about that God aren't true. The God could still exist. You're just discovering that that's not enough. That's not a good enough reason for you. And especially when you're surrounded by lots of other people who do think that's a good reason, it could be tough to critically examine it. And I'm really pleased that you are allowing yourself to do that.
And thank you again for calling back and for sharing your doubts with us, because that's bold. That's hard to do.
Yeah. One last question? Make it quick. I don't want to waste your time because
sure.
I know callers.
Mm-hmm. We have a lot of callers in the queue. Let's real quick.
Yeah, how do you get rid of this? Not doubt, but that's kind of part of you as a person. Because like I said, you get programmed with it, and it's hard to get rid of. Even if I don't believe.
That's the million-dollar question.
How do you get rid of that?
There's a couple. It kind of depends on what you think you need. So, like, if I were, I probably would just ask you what you think you need. So I would say, like, if we encountered somebody who was struggling with a belief and they're starting to realize that they don't have good reasons, what advice would you have for them? So when you start giving suggestions on how they may be able to deal with it, those might be things that you're willing to consider doing on your own. So that might be a fun exercise to do. And the other thing I would say is surround yourself with other people who are questioning, and surround yourself with people who did find prophecies and predictions compelling. You don't want to just put yourself in your own bubble of people who agree with you that prophecies maybe aren't the best reason for thinking that a God is real. So talk to as many people as you're doing as you can would be my advice.
I'm curious, Mark, have you been able to have access to our fan groups or our Discord server? Or there's also a Street Epistemology Discord server. There's two Facebook groups that we shared at the beginning of the show. And then we also have a Discord server that I'm sure we'll have a link pretty soon. If not, then it will at the end of the show. We're going to go to join Discord at the end of this.
No, I had no clue about those groups. I could join. I guess I can click and see what is it about. I just want to have one request from you guys. I would not like to put my name or country behind it, if it's possible. If it's
sure.
not, it's your show. You can do whatever.
We have a first name, but it's a pretty common first name. It'll be pretty hard to tell who you are.
You're pretty anonymous at this point.
Yeah.
Thank you
so much for calling, Mark. I hope that you have a good evening.
Same to you guys. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, Mark. All right, where do you want to go next?
I was actually thinking that Amber in South Carolina, this call screener say that's a good call. And I agree. I think that it's a good SE investigation to go into whether or not a soul exists. Amber, tell us about your soul belief.
Hi.
How are you?
You're on with Anthony and Jenna. I've always wanted to say that. All right. What's going on?
It's a, so I'm agnostic. So I'm like right there on that, you know, that perpendicular line, you know, not agnostic and Gnostic up and down. And you have theist and atheist on the right, to the right and left. So like, I'm right there on the line at agnostic. Like I haven't moved to theist or atheist. Like I can't get rid of the possibility that there might be something other than outside of, and we can't touch and reach it. And I've watched a lot of the atheist experience, especially with Matt. He's made great points as to why a soul makes no sense. But yet I still can't give up the idea that my soul exists. And I don't know if it's a fear of not being able to live in the beyond, or like the idea that we're missing out on a great opportunity and possibility. Also, like, I'm sure you've heard that the reincarnation stories, you know, children who are remembering like past lives and things like that, they're not exact, but they do remember quite a bit of stuff that they probably shouldn't. And I find that odd. Now, I'm not saying that's confirmation, but it does suggest to me there might be something more. And, you know, like the idea that we can live on and maybe do come back and experience this world again. And so, and it may be that the spiritual world is closed off purposely. Like, I've had so many ideas and thoughts on this. Like, maybe they don't want us to know that they're there. Maybe that we're here specifically to learn lessons.
All right.
It's going to be hard to reach, and that's why there's no... Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, no, no. It's just you've given us a lot. This is good. This is very good. So out of all those that you've listed, like, you know, we feel like we could be missing out, or there's people remembering things that they shouldn't, you know, can you identify which of these reasons have you convinced that a soul exists? I wonder if you can put your finger on it.
Those are probably just supporting suggestions. It's just a feeling. And I know that feelings aren't really a good way to measure any credibility. Matt talks about it a lot. Faith is not good, but there it is.
We're feeling creatures, right? It's kind of hard to deal with it. Let me ask you this. Like, I'm a little curious. What do you think you'd be missing if you came around to, realizing, like, I can't back up the claim that there are souls. And I understand that I love, like, it's very appealing to think that I might go on afterwards in some sort of supernatural realm. But here's what I'm wondering is, what do you think you'd be missing? Like, do you think that this life right now would be any less if you didn't think that there was an afterlife for you? Is that something that you've ever thought about or considered?
Yes, I've thought about that. I've thought, like, well, if I live this life believing that there is nothing in the beyond and I go in the beyond, what if, and because we don't know what's going on in the beyond, what if my whole purpose was to believe despite the barrier? Or, you know, maybe it was some game. You don't know. Maybe they're playing a game up there and this is just like a test. You know, if souls exist and we're immortal, then we have tons of time, and maybe this is just something we're doing just for shits and giggles, you know? Like, maybe the goal was to believe in it, and when you come out and you believe regardless, I have no idea. I've thought of many stupid stuff. Like, I have no idea. Mm-hmm. But that's where I'm coming at. It could be anything, right, in the beyond. Like, not... Like, the possibility that there might be something out there, like, what is, and if there is, like, what is the purpose of coming in here? Like, I think about it a lot, so I don't know. That's not a really good idea, but I think about it and sit and think about a bunch of different ideas, and you can't.
So, correct.
You can't touch it or look at it, you can make up anything, right?
Correct me if I'm wrong, but
you
it sounds.
You can make up anything.
It sounds like you are, please correct me if I'm wrong. It sounds like you're afraid of letting go. Like, well, if I don't believe that there's a soul, well, then what would I believe? It sounds like that's where you're getting stuck. Is that right?
That might be. It might be a little fear of letting go. But I want to. Like, I watch your show purposely to let go, but I don't know. It's just, like, dug in.
So,
Did I ever get an answer to the question, like, what would be missing in your life if...
Oh, sorry.
I shouldn't touch the microphone. Sorry. I don't know why I did that.
In my life, there wouldn't be anything missing. I guess it's what Jenna was saying, but it's more of a fear. But I guess I really wouldn't be missing anything. I don't think I can.
So I wonder
if you came to realize that there probably wasn't a supernatural realm, or you couldn't justify a supernatural realm. I think what you're saying is that your life today and in the future wouldn't be all that different. But if that's not what you're saying, correct me.
Well, there is the idea that my soul, like, well, if... And then this is what a lot of Christians use, I think, for why there should be a God, is like as to why you should behave, right? And then, you know, like if there's no moral, like, repercussions afterwards, or like support, you know, praying and like talking to people. I talk to myself regardless, but it would be nice to know that there's something out there listening to me that is helping me. you know, along in the world. And I think I would be missing out on that too, knowing that I have something on the other side guiding me through life. Because I used to be spirituality and New Age. And
knowing you have something on the other side, or thinking that there's something on the other side?
Well, for me, it was knowing. I was Gnostic at one point where I was like absolutely certain that there was. But I've moved down to agnostic where I'm just not sure. But I guess thinking is probably more correct, thinking or believing that there is.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if, have you thought about, well, what if, and just kind of try to sit on it and consider it for a minute, that we are just chemicals, that we are just physical beings. I wonder if you've considered, what if that's just all there is, and any meaning that there is in this life, we assign it to ourselves, and any feeling to a higher power, that's just a feeling that we have feeling ourselves. Have you considered that option? I'm just curious.
I mean, yes, like slightly, but not as deeply, I would like to say. I haven't thought about it as much, I guess. Because I went through a depression recently because I was losing my faith in spirituality and that there was anything out there. And it was a really scary and dark time because I'm like losing the belief that there's something else out there. It's really terrifying. And so I know why a lot of theists are, you know, I don't know what the word is I'm looking for, but like hard pressed not to move out. I asked my mom because, you know, she swears every day she's going to convert me back to Christianity. And she prays for my soul. And I tell her like, what would happen if you actually opened your mind to the idea that there might not be a God? She said she would lose her life. Those were literally her words. She would lose her life. And I get it. It's a really scary thing. And I went through that. So I guess I really don't want to go back to that. So like that, cause it's a lot of existentialism, like my purpose, why am I here? It was a very uncomfortable feeling. So a little bit, but not as much as I should probably.
Hmm. Okay. Yeah. These are tough views, especially if you've held them for a very long time, because they can become a part of your identity. And then the idea of losing a cherished belief can be very upsetting, especially if it gives you the idea that you're going to go on beyond this life. And the realization that this might just be all that there is can be really tough to deal with. But based on this short little conversation, it sounds like you're approaching it in a pretty good way. Like you're taking it very slow and methodically, and you're recognizing that it's been painful. And you've even brought up this other example of your mom, and you recognize that some people can't even fathom the idea that it's not true, but you're considering it, you're processing it. And I think that's probably where you need to be. And you might want to ask yourself, what would I need to see in order to think that it's true? And if the chance of that ever happening, if I can never discover something to my own standard that would convince me that this is true, why should I continue going through my life hoping or wishing that that thing will actually happen to me? So continuing that self-dialogue, I think, will probably help you in that regard. And you don't have to rush it either. There's no rush. Just take your time and move at your own pace.
Yeah, I would.
Thank you. Go ahead. Sorry.
No, I was just going to say that it sounds to me like you're doing exactly what you need to be doing and taking care of yourself and asking the right questions. And from my understanding about how this stuff happens to people, it just takes time. It takes time thinking about other things to loosen that belief. It's not going to happen overnight, usually.
I've got one more question before you go, Amber, if you don't mind.
No problem.
Do you have the opportunity to tell somebody about this belief or teach them that it's true? Like a youngster or a niece or a nephew or a child?
Oh, a child. No, I don't have a child who is impressionable or anything. Yeah, no, I don't have an impressionable human being nearby that I have access to.
So my question is, if you had the opportunity, let's say you had a child or you were babysitting somebody, is this a belief that you would want them to hold?
No. I would let them go through life to discovering what they believe. I would definitely be open to that. I'm really against people teaching your kids religion at an early age because it's programmed and then it's hard to get out of once you start. But again, people are going to do what people do. You can't tell somebody not to teach their children their religion, which is, you know, it's a hard balance there. But no, I personally would not.
Okay. So my thinking here is if you are not willing to propagate the belief, then it sounds like you're probably coming to the realization that it's probably not a belief worth holding. But I don't want to put words in your mouth or anything like that. But that's kind of the sense that I get. Like, even if the belief had value, Like the idea of having a life after death is kind of an appealing thing. But if it can't be backed up with evidence or some way to demonstrate that it's the case, then it might be time to just set that aside. All right.
Yeah, it's just hard. But thank you so
it's
much.
It's tough. No, it is tough. It's totally tough. I get it.
Well, thank you, Amber.
It's only been a few months. No problem. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you very much, Amber. Can we take call 12? Just
go
jumped.
For it.
How about call 12?
All right. So we've got Chase.
I hit talk, right? Okay. I'm still a newbie at this. I didn't hang up on them, did I?
No, it's in there. It says okay. Caleb has thoughts on the differences between the
two. I was worried there for a second.
Chase wants to talk to Anthony about street epistemology.
So you can understand why I wanted to take the call.
Yeah.
What's going on, Chase?
Hey, how you doing, guys? Thanks for having me on.
Hey, yeah. Thanks for calling.
Yeah.
What do you want to chat about?
Well, I wanted to ask Anthony about the recent video that you just put online. With Caleb. I thought it was really interesting video.
Tell us about it.
Do you want to give a little bit of a recap for the audience so that they can catch up?
Yeah, sure.
I can if you want. Doesn't matter.
About 4 years ago, well, I guess it was in 2014, you met Caleb out on the street, and he was kind of doing some street preaching, and he was very exuberant and outspoken and outgoing, and he seems like a really nice guy, but he seemed very zealous in his beliefs. And then, 4 years later, I guess in 2018, you filmed another interaction with him, and his demeanor was very different than the original video. And that was part of what I wanted to touch on a little bit was, I was curious if he reached out to you first or if you reached out to him. I mean, that seems like a long time to go without speaking and then to get back in touch.
Okay. So if I remember right, we exchanged emails. And I probably just said, I think we had a little bit of an email exchange going back and forth because I think he said that his view was dependent on contradictions being true. But I don't remember the exact, I don't remember how we decided to meet again, but we did meet again in December of 2018. And yeah, his demeanor was completely different. Now, who knows what the cause of that was? It could have just been early in the morning. He could have just had a really good night's rest, or who knows what was driving that change of behavior. And it was only two data points, but he seemed to grown. And I think I grew also. Like if you watch that first exchange, I was arguing with him. I was I really arguing with him? I was really trying not to, but it was very animated. It was a lot different than the subsequent conversation. And, but what was your specific question about it?
Well, I had two interesting points. The first one from the most recent video, he mentioned the idea of spiritual gifts, and I thought that was really interesting. I mean, I'm a former Christian myself, and that label was new to me too. And just my takeaway from that was it almost sounds like that label is designed to sound kind of like a faux superpower or something, maybe to kind of embolden the belief holders. I was curious what you thought of that.
That was the first time that I heard the word spiritual gifts, but it was presented, if I remember right, he was saying that spiritual gifts are attributes that a human has that they can then use to help promote the word of God. And I think he was lamenting his inability to effectively communicate or street preach or preach at the pulpit, that type of thing. But I don't think we really got too much deeper into it other than that. Like, yeah, maybe that's just sort of a way of identifying characteristics that a specific person has that might be useful in the promotion of a particular religion. And then you give it this really nice shiny name, but you have spiritual gifts. I have spiritual gifts. Wow. I need to do something with this for God. So it's probably a sneak. It's probably not intentional, but it seems to me like on the surface, a kind of a sneaky way of encouraging people to go and utilize the strengths that they have for the promotion of a specific worldview. That's the impression that I got there.
Right. Yeah. I agree with that. I can see that. Did you happen to catch, I don't recall what denomination he was. I was just curious. Did you happen to catch that?
He mentioned millennialism. Is that a denomination? I'm not sure, but he was a young earth creationist, but I don't know what specific denomination he was.
Okay.
I think I don't want to put too many words in his mouth, and it's kind of, it might be hard for viewers who are not familiar with this conversation to follow along with what we're talking about. But the point is that, at least in my view, he was willing to meet with me again on camera to continue the discussion, even though it was a very contentious first meeting. So I was pleased that he was like, I admire him for having this, the courage and strength to meet with me again on camera to continue the discussion, because he didn't know that I changed. I could have been the same Anthony that was in that very first video. And I didn't know what to expect. That's why I was really kind of surprised to see how much he changed too.
Right. Well, and I guess in keeping with that, that's probably a good segue. A lot of people may not understand what we're talking about here, so I'll wrap up. But I just had one last question.
Yeah.
More to the meat of his the conversation. What do you think is the best way to address his idea of what he called the totality of the circumstances? You guys compared it to a hub and a wheel and spokes.
Mm-hmm.
How do you, I mean, that seems to be a common theme for theists. You know, they have a bunch of, I mean, I don't mean to sound this derogatory, but a bunch of half-baked ideas a little bit, and they go, well, when you have a bunch of them, it all makes sense. But how do you respond to something like that?
Do you have any thoughts on that, Jenna? Because I certainly do. Okay.
No.
So Caleb, I think, and we even noticed this when Jenna and I did a breakdown video of a Catholic bishop who did a critique video of street epistemology. So we did a review of that one. That is on the Street Epistemology YouTube channel. But there's a very common retort from theists that will, it doesn't have to be a theist. You can be really, really into immigration or your political party, and you can say, I have so many reasons for thinking that this is true. You just can't knock out one or two. That's frustrating as a skeptic to hear that, because it's my position that we should have good reasons for our position that bolster our confidence in it. And if we come to realize that it's not a good reason to our own satisfaction, that we should allow it to impact our overall confidence in the claim. But when you have a cherished belief, it's really easy to say, but I've got so many other reasons that can backfill this. So this is why I try to oftentimes ask for like a numerical assessment of how much of an impact this would have on your view. Or in the case of Caleb, are there some dependencies going on here? Because he had mentioned faith at one point. So sometimes faith is the hub of that wheel that a lot of these spokes are dependent on. Meaning if so-and-so is convinced that they had a miracle and that's their main reason, but when you ask, how are you so sure that you had a miracle? They say, well, it's all based on faith. So sometimes digging down just a little bit deeper to see what this is, what their main reasons are really being based on can sort of be the main linchpin to the whole belief. But the only way that you're going to really identify those is to keep asking questions and say, if we discovered that that wasn't true, would it lower your confidence? No. Okay. If we discovered that wasn't true together to your satisfaction, or not discovered that it wasn't true. If we discovered that it's that you don't have a really good way of determining that that's a good reason, would it have an impact on your confidence? You can repeat that a couple of times until you identify a reason that really would lower their confidence. And you probably notice people on these shows doing this. Like, this is a really good way to figure out the main one that's propping up most of it. So it's really just a matter of repeating that, repeating those series of questions till you find something that will influence it. What can be disturbing though, is when somebody says, well, like, you know, there's nothing that I could discover that would lower my confidence on this claim. And then you can ask them questions about if they have other beliefs that meet that same criteria, that you continue holding it, even if every reason that you had couldn't be justified to your own satisfaction. What I think you'll end up finding is that a lot of people, and I think we saw that I think we saw this in some of the previous callers, that when it comes down to it, the beliefs are meeting psychological needs and people want them to be true. So you oftentimes have to explore what the belief is giving them. What benefit is this belief yielding to you? Because if they can identify that they're deriving value from the belief and they can achieve that same value by not holding this belief or some other belief, then it might be a little bit easier for them to acknowledge that that's not a good reason.
I see.
All right.
Well, that's awesome. And that was,
Thanks for watching that video. There's going to be a part two of that coming up.
I'm sure that one of our mods can possibly find the video. Hopefully,
I'm sure one of my friends probably dropped the link in there already.
There you go.
I'm not watching the YouTube stream. Yeah.
Well, thank you for calling and talking to us.
Thanks,
about
Chase.
That.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Take care, guys.
Okay.
You too. All right. Did you see anybody else that you wanted to talk to?
We have a lot of people in the queue here. My goodness.
Let's do we haven't done an atheist yet.
We haven't? I thought we did.
An agnostic person.
Whatever you want.
How about Sid? It says that you would like to discuss grief as a new atheist. That's a pretty common issue. I'm sorry to hear that, Sid. You're on with Jenna and Anthony.
Hello, Sid.
Yes. Hey, how are you guys doing? I'm like such a fan of the show.
Awesome.
I would like
so to am I.
Grief. Like my dad, he died about 4 years ago. And I've been an atheist for, I would say, most of my life.
But
I did, grow up in a Muslim family. So it's been kind of difficult.
Do you mind if I ask what it is you'd like us to discuss today?
Just how you guys process grief. Like if you guys had any death in the family or anything like that you guys went through, like a parent or someone close.
Yeah. I actually just 6 months ago or 5 months ago actually lost my father-in-law, and he and I were getting very, very close. Like he's become another father figure to me. So this is the first death that I've really experienced like hardcore grief from since becoming an atheist, especially. And the way that I kind of look at it, instead of telling myself, oh, he's in heaven or purgatory, I remind myself that the way that we keep people alive is by talking about them, sharing memories, by remembering them. And so anytime I have a memory about my father-in-law, I share it with somebody who knew him or somebody that I care about, or even just a friend that I'm with at the time and say, oh, this reminds me of this, because that keeps him alive in my head. And I think that's as real as anybody, if that makes any sense, if I didn't sound too woo.
That doesn't sound woo to me. Yeah. Yeah. The remnants of the relationship are usually laying around. They're photographs, like in addition to the memories that you have of them. Ornaments. Like I noticed Jenna has her Christmas tree. Mm-hmm. After this, I'm going to go and we're going to put ornaments on our Christmas tree. And sure enough, there will be ornaments that were given to us from people who are no longer with us that literally made the ornaments that we're putting on the tree.
Mm-hmm.
And just maybe that idea of just taking a couple of seconds to remember them is good enough for me. Like they and maybe even thinking like the impact that they had, maybe something that they did for you that stays with you today. That's probably one of the best ways that we can honor them. It's tempting to think that I'm going to see them again. It's something that a lot of theists think is the case. Sometimes a lot of atheists, especially if they were believers, that's something that they struggle with. This idea, like the caller about the soul, it would be nice to see these loved ones again. It doesn't seem like that happens. So I guess I'm comfortable with the idea that I'm not going to see these loved ones again, but I have remnants of the relationship that I did have with them. And that's good enough for me. I couldn't ask for, what else would I really need? I mean, I'm fine with that.
I was just going to add one more thing is that, I'm a total nerd and I'm really obsessed with Disney. And there's a second Mary Poppins that's come out, Mary Poppins Returns. And there's a song that Emily Blunt sings about to these kids who have lost their mother. And she says that you can find her in the place where the lost things are. Now, it's very imaginary, but you can go to the place where the lost things are in your dreams. So it's not like you can never see these people again. When you go to sleep, when you have these memories, you can literally see them in your head. And so I think that that's when imagination becomes useful, is when you understand that you're using it to cope with things like this.
Yeah, that's the tough part for me. Like, I just want to add one more thing. Like, with the loss, it started to, because like I had some belief in God before, and when I had the loss, it felt like half of myself died. Like, and I started to like get into like beliefs in souls and things like that. I'm like, man, like maybe a part of me died with him. And then I have some kind of like idea that maybe there's an afterlife, because like I'm an atheist, like I don't believe in God at all, but at the same time, like, I'm like, is it a possibility? And I think some days, like, maybe there's a possibility that maybe I'm not going to see him again, but maybe there's an afterlife where he's somewhere, doing well,
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a nice concept. It's a nice idea. Although there are some people that have passed that meeting them again in a future, what would you call that? Like an afterlife? is not very appealing to me. There's some people that I really wouldn't want to ever see again, but these loved ones, yeah, they were foundational to who I am, and they were foundational to who you are. And it could be tough to acknowledge that, gosh, I'm probably not going to ever see this person again. So, honoring them with a song or perseverating on them to the point when you're falling asleep, maybe to inspire a dream. I've never considered that as an option. Might be fun to try.
Yeah, maybe next time I'll go fishing, I'll think about them. But thank you guys for having me on. I hope you guys have a great day. Anthony and Jenna.
Thanks. Thank you, Sid. Great call. Appreciate it. Get a little easier.
All right.
I always feel pressured to read these descriptions. don't you?
Yeah, I mean, I usually read them here and there throughout the call, and then keep a number in my head. So I've got one off the top of my head. If you don't have one that's jumping out at you.
Okay. Well, there's somebody who wants to discuss using street epistemology to discuss politics.
Let's do it.
You want to do that one? Okay.
Let's do it.
Okay.
All right. So we're on with Sam.
Sam.
Hi, I'm a huge fan of the show. Anthony, I've watched many of your videos on YouTube, and I'm a huge fan of street epistemology just as a conversation tool. Jenna, I want to say congratulations on the pregnancy and, you know, very excited for you. But my question is, you know, I ran for office a few times, ran for a general assembly seat where I live. And I've found a little bit of difficulty using the techniques in street epistemology to discuss politics. I think it's part of it is that people are a little bit more suspicious of you whenever you start asking questions like, you know, what's the number one reason that you believe this? So what's the best piece of evidence for this belief?
Why would they be suspicious about that? I think that's a fair question, honestly. It's an unusual question. So maybe is that what you think is causing the suspicion or something else?
I'm not sure. I was curious as to whether or not you had tried, you know, talking about, you know, political topics, using SE, and how successful or effective you think that might be, whether it's, you know, worth somebody doing a little bit of a project on.
I could speak to that. So primarily, there's a lot of examples online where people are using street epistemology with God believers and even atheists too. And that's my preferred topic because I think that the God belief is the foundation for lots of other beliefs, including political beliefs. So I almost view going after the political stuff as kind of ancillary because a lot of that is predicated on a person thinking that they're good and decent, and they lump that together with their God belief. But you can absolutely set aside the God claim and go for the political stuff. And I've done it. There's probably maybe 10 videos on my channel, not that many, maybe more. But there are other people who are doing street epistemology specifically to use it with non-theistic claims. And we've even started a nonprofit for street epistemology called Street Epistemology International. The website, just throw a .org at the end of that. And we've tabled at political conventions because we see the value of this tool when somebody makes a claim about a political reality, whether they think Benghazi actually happened or that mask usage is foolish or something like that, or so-and-so is the best president. You can absolutely use it with that. But what I'm finding is that it's almost like that the spokes on the wheel type of thing. There are a lot of spokes on that wheel when it comes to the political stuff. So you can really exhaust yourself talking about all these political claims, but that's okay. You can have one conversation with them and maybe they run into five more people who ask questions about their other spokes. And that's fine. So what was really interesting though, when we were tabling and we were filming a lot of the conversations, there's a channel called Cordial Curiosity that I think has like an 8-hour video of people just one after the other coming up to talk about political stuff. And it's fantastic. Some of them, of course, go to religion because the person brings that up is the reason why they're a Democrat or Republican or something in between. And it's fascinating to see the technique being used on those claims. But there's a certain amount of, you need to set your own expectations, I think, accordingly with this tool set, with those types of claims, because there's something more going on with a person's identity when it comes to the political stuff as opposed to the theistic stuff. And I haven't quite put my finger on it yet.
I think that is.
But I don't know.
Sorry.
But, Oh, no, that's okay. Please. Sometimes I have this tendency to just talk and talk. Go ahead and add something to that if you like.
No, that's fine. No, I was curious to know if you had thought about that a little bit more deeply and why that seems to be the case.
Yeah, absolutely. Like I think SE, we have enough examples where we're using street epistemology with theists to recognize that that it's amazingly effective, in my view, with theists and helping them take another look at their views. So we've moved on to other stuff. Now, we haven't abandoned using SE with theistic claims. It's great. It's a great tool, but we want to use this tool for all claims. And here's the other thing. I don't care where you stand politically. I want you to learn this tool so that if you're a Republican, you can use it with a Democrat or a Democrat Republican or whatever, because I think it will help you get better at driving to the actual truth of the matter, because there is a factual truth whether or not masks are good or bad for you with regards to this disease. Okay.
Sure.
Or does it, you know, there's a factual truth of the matter whether we really have a serious problem with immigration in this country. These are all things that could be explored with this tool. So,
but it's also more complicated than that. You know, it's not even just are masks good for you. It's are masks good for others. You know, there's so many more things to cover just a black and white. Is this true? You know, did the coronavirus start in a lab? Okay. Well, it's so much more complicated.
Right.
You know,
and helping a person realize that maybe they can't back up a specific claim that ties them into a specific political tribe. Their discovery that they can't back up that claim they're not going to start turning in their card or changing their voter registration, but you can be giving them this tool that they can take in for themselves and start using it on their own beliefs and bring into the other people within their own tribe. So, there's not a real, here's what I would love to see. I would love to see a whole new generation of people using SE specifically on political claims. And that's the direction that I think we're heading in, as evidenced by us going to those conferences and trying to get this tool set into those hands. So we will probably look back in 5 years and be amazed at how far we've come with using SE on those claims. But my experience on the political realm is not really quite as good as on the theistic stuff, personally.
Well, I really appreciate you guys taking the call. One more time, what was the name of that video that you had mentioned where there were several hours of?
Reed's going to love that. Okay, so it's called Cordial Curiosity. Cordial Curiosity. And there's also a playlist. It's if you go to the Street Epistemology YouTube channel, there's a playlist where there's a good half a dozen people who are uploading videos of others using Street Epistemology on political claims and other stuff. And it's updated on an almost daily basis. So check that out as well.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you guys so much. And thank you for doing this work. I just love the show. And, you know, I've been listening for years. It's the first time I've called in. So have a nice day, guys.
I'm glad that
you
called.
Thanks, Sam. Well, let's go ahead and practice some of that SE on Steven, who thinks that he can prove that Jesus forced us into existence. Hi, Steven.
Forced us. Non-consensual existence.
Hi.
Is that what we're talking about today?
Yes.
Can you prove that?
I was calling to see, do y'all believe y'all were forced into existence by or through Jesus Christ?
Why should we believe that?
I believe my main evidence is the 144,000 Jews are being saved as we speak and will proclaim the gospel of Jesus Christ to the world just as it is being preached now. Also,
I'm sorry. So are you saying that there's something happening right now that has you convinced that Jesus in the past forced us to exist?
Yes.
Did Jesus force all humans into existence or just some?
All.
How did we make this connection? How can we verify this, that these two things are connected?
Because
we don't want to overwhelm you with questions here, but yeah, feel free to answer either one of those.
Because of the prophecies that he has made in his inspired word, scripture, inspired scriptures.
His inspired scriptures.
Also that.
Why do you believe those?
From the Bible. I've read them. And from what I've seen in his I've read the Bible, and from what I've seen in history, what the prophets have said and what Jesus has said has come true, has come true as we speak.
Do you have a good example? Just one?
Also, that one spot of land that God said he was going to give to his people, I think it's neat how they are settling in it right now, even as we have democracies.
Okay. So you're saying, I think we need to clarify some things here, Stephen. I'm sorry, Stephen, to interrupt. But I just wanted to clarify. So you're saying that there are people settling in a land, and this was foretold in the Bible, and that is why you think that Jesus forced us to exist. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay, so how can we look at this a little bit closer? Who are these people, and where are they settling, and how do we know that that has anything to do with Jesus?
Okay, the Jews, the Israelites that they talk about in on the news that are in.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I don't remember what.
I'm sorry, I'm lost.
I think this might be a good.
I don't remember.
Yeah, if you don't, what if we put you on hold and maybe pick you up in a little bit? You want to think about your claim a little bit more and give it in a more concise manner?
Sure. Yeah, we returned him to the queue, and we just ask that Stephen just maybe try to figure out what exactly the claim is, and how to structure it so that we can verify it, so that we can investigate.
Okay.
So.
Where do you want to go next? How about, can we go to 50?
Let's do 50.
Andrea. I don't know how to pronounce it. Hello,
Can you hear me?
Hi, is it Andrea?
Yeah, Andrea.
Hi, Andrea. You're on with Jenna and Anthony.
It's a pleasure to talk to you guys.
You too.
Hi,
Jenna.
Hi, Anthony. My question is specific for Anthony, but of course I'm happy to hear what you think too, Jenna, which is whenever I talk to people about and with curiosity about what they believe, and this is specifically true for I think politics even more than religion, some people, love to tell you what they think, but a bunch of people really feel attacked immediately, even if you are incredibly cautious and gentle about it. What do you guys think about it? What's your perspective, and what can we do about it?
I could tell you why I got defensive when people asked me about my beliefs, if that helps, because I can't really speculate for other people. But I know that if somebody were to come up and start questioning my beliefs, that immediately would set off an alarm that they don't agree with me already. And when I was a believer, I was under the impression that everybody believed, that everybody was on the same page as me. And so if somebody were to give me an impression that they are living in a completely different world than I am mentally, then that was something that I was taught to be aware of, to be warned, to put up your guard, hear no evil, see no evil. If you have no idea what it is, assume it's evil and run away. And so I was conditioned for my guard to go up when somebody were to challenge my beliefs, especially if they were, why would they do that unless they were trying to change my mind? And so if somebody was trying to change my mind, I was told that that's the devil, that is directly the devil doing work in my life.
Wow.
So it was scary to me.
Do you think there's anything that a person could have done to kind of come off less aggressive, or what do you think? Or it's just there's a defense mechanism and there's nothing to do about it?
I think that when I was like that, there was nothing that somebody could do except allow me to be exposed to other people and witness other people practicing their beliefs without me being forced to be involved, without feeling like I had to participate. I could be a silent observer, make my own judgments, and then make my own decisions from there.
See, that's interesting, because that happens a lot with this actual show. There are people who aren't calling in but are observing the interactions, and they're safe. They're observing it. They're not in the hot seat. They are contemplating the questions that are being asked and the things that the hosts are saying or asking, and that's awesome. Now, I'm glad that you answered that from your perspective, because I was going to answer it in terms of the interactions that I've had with hundreds and hundreds of people. And,
that's great, too.
Yeah, and I do notice an initial defensiveness, especially if it's a cherished belief that is part of who they are. So there are a lot of things that you can do, I suppose, to help a person feel comfortable to allowing you to question it. But despite your best efforts, you can still run into somebody who just doesn't want to talk about it. It's off limits to them. Now, there are ways that you can still teach a person to be critical about their views, and it's different topics altogether. And it's not this lightning rod or the third rail of beliefs. You can chip away, I suppose, or at least explore safer topics with your conversation partner with an idea of building trust. So sometimes I notice somebody becoming very defensive when I'm just simply asking, well, when you say God, exactly what do you mean by that? And you can notice in their body language that it appears that they're becoming defensive. They may even say, right. Or you can even notice it in the words that they're using, that they're becoming defensive. So sometimes just recognizing that you've hit a nerve and pulling back a little bit and giving them a little bit of room to think about something completely different, or even revealing your own position, can actually open a person up. You could say, I used to believe what you believe today too, and I no longer do. And if you're interested, I can tell you why. And if they can see that you're being sincere and you're listening to them and you're being respectful to them, they will probably start opening up and giving that back to you in return. But I wouldn't recommend doing it as like a gimmick to open them up. Like, really be sincere.
Right.
Like, I was where you were at. I didn't find it convincing once I really started thinking about it. And I got to tell you, it was a little bit challenging for me at times. I struggled with this. So it wasn't an easy thing. But if you're willing, if you would like to allow me to question you on this view, I'd love to be able to do it. But you're under no pressure to do so. Just like I said, just lay it all out on the line and go where they take you. And sometimes people just aren't ready for it.
I think sincerity is the key. I think that if somebody were to question me and not be sincere, I think that I could have sensed it right away and my guard would have gone up no matter what they said.
Right.
You have to be sincere.
I'm noticing that especially basic... Sorry, go ahead.
No, you're
please
good.
Go.
Oh, I'm noticing that especially basic questions, like when you just, Anthony, mentioned, what do you mean by God? It's a very basic question, but especially those... To me, it feels like people get caught off guard and they feel particularly attacked, and as if you're like playing some game.
Right. So,
yeah.
Listen, you know how I'll go out with my camera, and I've learned really early on to uppercase the G in God, because I've seen people just shut down completely by using a lowercase G. But then there are some people who are nonplussed by it. They're not bothered by it at all. They don't even notice that it was a lowercase G.
Well,
they may
some...
even write.
Well, but just there's some I don't want to say families, but at least units of people that get together and create this like echo chamber to where, for example, if somebody were to be writing out an email to this group of people and lowercase the G on God, that would be a direct symbol to that. That would be like a dig at them. Like, that's actually how people in that group would use that if they.
Yeah. But here's the thing. This is the important thing. How are you reacting? Like, hopefully you're fortunate enough where they pointed out to you, or you can notice that they were upset that you did something so that you can make a genuine attempt to correct it.
Yes.
Like, say, I didn't realize it was that important to you. From this point on, I'll uppercase the G in God. And you don't have to do it in a snide way. Like, it doesn't, you can even just be honest with them. Like, it honestly, it doesn't really matter to me if it's an uppercase G or not, but it seems like it's important to you. And that's good enough for me to go along with you.
You know, and to kind of put it into perspective, this might be a little bit controversial to bring this up, but in validating when there's a theist who is resisting allowing or resisting using somebody's correct pronouns, right? Because it doesn't affect them, that I would compare those two things and say, well, if it matters to the person that you're referring to, or if it matters to the person that you're talking to about this God, I think that it's a respectful thing to, if it matters to you and it doesn't matter to me, I'm going to do what's respectful to you.
Mm-hmm. But again, just to caution, this isn't agreeing to disagree. This is being compassionate about a person that is probably important to you. Like, it's a family member or a friend, or maybe if it's even a stranger, and, giving a little for the benefit of the entire conversation moving forward, right? Like recognizing, okay, this is important to you. I'm okay going along with it. Let's continue if you're comfortable doing so. And that act alone could have amazing implications for the quality of your conversation going forward, because you've built trust. You've recognized that this is important to them. You're treading, you're moving at the pace that they're comfortable moving at. And that's a huge part of the in my view, the approach of this SE stuff, this street epistemology stuff is acknowledging that these beliefs are very dear to people. People will fight tooth and nail to protect their beliefs, especially if they think they're good people because they're holding them. So sometimes you have to be nice.
Well,
even though maybe you don't necessarily want to or don't think it's necessary yourself.
Well, but you also want to kind of be an example and show the behavior that you're looking for. You know, would you look for that same respect back?
What I found, though, is that I don't know if I mentioned this, if you do extend that, usually it does come back to you. That now it might be coming from a place of pity if you're talking to a theist who is like, oh, this poor atheist. Mm-hmm. But in any event, you're being more human to each other. You're being nicer to each other. You're being more respectful to each other. And that's the lubricant that makes conversations really flow.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's tough. It's tough. Especially when if you've overcome a belief that you are now convinced to a high degree of confidence is not true, and you look at that and you kind of view it as sort of childish. But I would just ask yourself to try to put yourself in their shoes. That's what we're pretty good at doing, aren't we? We're kind of empathetic people for the most part. Most of us are, I think, or at least we try to be. So let's try to roll with that.
Right. That was very helpful. I really love to hear from you. Well, thank you very much and love you guys.
Thanks, Anthony or Andrea. Sorry.
Oh, we got a love out of that one. That's nice.
Well, we've got a couple more calls. Let's see if we can get to them all. We've got Sky in
optimistic.
I think we can do it. We've got a struggling non-denominational believer. It says that you fear the end of times keep you believing. How do you want to talk about that, Sky? How are you?
Hello, Sky.
How are you guys doing?
Doing pretty good.
Groovy.
Cool.
Tell us what you believe.
I started really wrestling with my beliefs in May, and I'm in the middle of deconverting, and I think anyway. and I've kind of wrapped up my beliefs that I'm still holding on to into a couple things, and one of them is the fear of like the rapture and tribulation, like the biblical apocalypse of Revelation.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically,
were you a particular denomination, a religious denomination? I'm a little curious.
Non-denominational, but we all know that's kind of just Baptist without putting Baptist on it.
Mm.
At least the church I grew up in.
Okay.
You did say non-denominational. My bad. Sorry.
That's okay.
Okay.
So what has you hooked on this? Like, what has you convinced that that's going to happen?
Are you convinced it's going to happen? Like, can we quantify it on a scale? Like, how sure are you that it's really going to happen? 0 to 100?
I actually would say it's about 50% right now. It's not really like a huge thing for me, but it's definitely one of the things why I'm still believing. It's kind of like how the fear of hell for other people is. I really don't fear hell. I don't really fear death, but I do fear being left behind. If that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. When I hear a 50%, I want to make sure that we're not talking about whether you think it's true or false. That you're like at a, you know, you're halfway up to a 100 on a scale that it actually would happen.
Yeah, that it would actually happen. I think it's about 50-50 right now.
Do you have reasons to back up that level of confidence?
I mean, I really don't. It's just what I was taught growing up.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things that it's so in me that now I cannot put it aside without addressing it. You know what I mean?
I totally know what you mean. This is a common thing that comes up quite a bit with the agents at Recovering from Religion. These legacy beliefs, these legacy fears that came with the belief. And I don't know if I have a really good answer to how to overcome that, other than maybe asking you how you think you could overcome it or other people might overcome it, and then explore those reasons with you. And we can get into that here if you'd like, or we can kind of talk like meta high level about it, whatever you want to do.
I mean, yeah, I have a specific, like another, I guess a specific question, like you know, how, like, you made the analogy of, like, the wheel and the spoke, like, this is a spoke that comes off of that belief, is that, it, so, like, the prophecies in Revelation, so it's a big if they were to come true, but if for some reason they started to come true methodically and one by one, just as they're prophesied, more or less, in the Bible, would that be good enough reason to believe that the Bible is true or that God exists?
Mm-hmm. And what's your answer to that? Because you're the one that has the belief. You're the one that has to make that determination. Well, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Have you encountered people who used to believe it but don't anymore? That they would be raptured? The fear of rapture.
No. I have not encountered anybody who is not actually, like, in some way a theist or spiritual at some point. Like,
You need to meet some more people. That's okay. And sometimes people are in communities where they just don't have access to folks like that. But atheists are everywhere, whether you were born atheist or you overcame your God belief. And there are even, shocker, atheists who have overcome their fears of being raptured or their fear of hell. It's not an easy thing. And sometimes people struggle with it for all of their life. You know, it's one of these possibly psychological things that just stick with you. But there are people also who have overcome it. So sometimes what I found in experience and observing interactions with people, believers and non-believers, is that when you meet somebody who shares their story about how they overcame their fear, that it could be really instrumental in getting you on that same journey. But it's not a cure-all. You may find that it exacerbates your fear. So you're just going to have to, in my view, just find other people who are at various stages in their process of overcoming that, and then see, observe and see how that is affecting your own fears. But don't feel bad about it. Like, this is something that people struggle with. Like, this, these religious views, they're a mind fuck. they will mess you up. They have the potential to mess you up, and they mess up a lot of people that really struggle with it for all their lives. But there are solutions out there, and sometimes you have to elevate it and maybe talk to a therapist. But there are trained people, there are resources at Recovering from Religion that could probably talk with you about that. We're talking about it now. I hope this might be somewhat therapeutic, but I'm yammering again, so let's go to you.
Well, I'm curious, you know, the way that you've started this call and the way that you said that you're in the process of deconverting, I wonder, you know, you have this fear of the rapture and you're curious about prophecies. I'm curious, are you convinced that there is a God right now?
I have bad reasons for believing in a God. Like, I have personal experiences, and that's what makes me believe in a God. And I know that's not good evidence and that's not a good reason. And, you know, I'm working through that, you know.
Is there a relationship between your fear of the rapture and your belief that there's a God? Like, I'm wondering if you started lowering your confidence that God was real over the coming months and years, if there would be a corresponding impact in your fear of being raptured. Or do you think that that's something that you continue being fearful of, even if you were pretty convinced that there was no God?
I think it goes both ways. Like, I had this fear when I was, like, a strong theist, and I am not that anymore, obviously. But, like, I have seen that fear go down, and I've also seen it amplified over, like, I guess the last couple of months, where I'm really starting to see, like, okay, I really don't have good reasons for my belief. And then my brain goes, okay, but what if it's still true? Mm-hmm. Then this would happen. And so I feel like they're connected, but like, if my fear in the rapture were to go down, not necessarily my God belief would go down as well. But if the God belief went up, then it wouldn't go down, you know? They're not like that.
They're not necessarily tethered together. Yeah. Well, that kind of makes sense, because there are a lot of atheists who still struggle with those fears. So, I mean, in all honesty, this might be something that you'll just have to deal with for the rest of your life. But hopefully that's not the case. Nobody wants to be getting stressed out or worried about something that Yeah. Probably the best thing that you can do is to just keep asking yourself, do I have a good reason for being worried about this? I find myself doing this whenever I'm, not whenever, but when I'm grilling food, the vegans are going to get on me now. Okay. when I'm grilling any type of food, you can grill vegetables, I suppose. When my hand gets a little too close to that flame, the thought crosses my mind, what if this is real? Like, what if there really is hell? Or what if there is a rapture or something? Like, those fears come up. And I don't think that there are any gods.
Yeah.
I haven't for a very long time. I find myself reminding myself that I don't have any good reason for thinking that it's true. And that helps me. That helps me reset myself. And maybe that's something that you can try too. Like, just try to have that inner conversation with you, with yourself, and be like, the time to be worried about it is when there's a good reason to think that it's the case.
And, you know, it also, you said that you've just started questioning like 6 months ago. And so it's, I know it might feel like it's been a long time, but it really hasn't. This kind of thing gets, like you said, programmed into us by repetition and time. And so it's going to take the opposite of that. It's going to take time and exposure to deconversions before you can truly loosen that. So a lot, exactly what Anthony said, but I would also, so he recommended recovering from religion. Which you can call them anytime. And there's several places. Like there's a website and there's a phone number.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Then there's the Secular Therapy Project. If you can afford to get a therapist, there's all kinds of deconversion stories out on YouTube. The Neil, the 604 Atheist is a good one. There's a whole bunch of deconversion stories you can go and listen to, and listen to how other people got through this. And then we also have our fan groups, the ones on Facebook that we mentioned at the beginning of the show. We have a public and a private one. So this is the public, and then there's private, so that you don't have to be out as an atheist. And we have our Discord server, which we're also going to be joining at the end of the show for a few minutes. So there's so many ways to expose yourself and just keep talking, keep asking questions, keep doing what you're doing. I'm so happy for you that you're doing this.
And if you find a way to overcome it, give us a call back and share it with us, because there are probably other people listening right now that want to know how you end up resolving it if you are able to. So if you have some great ideas, try to share them.
All right. Do you have anything else, Sky?
No. Thank you guys for your time.
Thank you so much.
Hope to talk to you again soon.
Last caller.
So we do have one more caller, Joe. You know, thank you for calling. It says that you want to discuss the contingency and the cosmological arguments. Now, the thing is that that's a very good question for Matt, because he can break down the arguments and the structures and all that. And I can't really do that. What I'd really like to do is to just kind of break it down in a very non-traditional way. But I think that that will take a lot more time than 30 seconds. Go ahead.
Oh, yeah, that's fine. I'm not like some brilliant mind or anything. So I just think, you know, they're just simple arguments. And I've listened to Matt's arguments before, and I don't particularly agree with him. So, yeah.
Well, I'd love to chat with you. Please feel free to call back when I'm on. If I'm on, you can be the first caller that I'd take. Just tell the call screener. Hopefully you'd be able to call back another week and they'll be able to take you then pretty quickly. But we do have a Discord server and those fan groups that we talked about. So hopefully we can get you taken care of no matter what.
You don't want to talk about it at all.
There was actually one. I'm actually curious as
okay,
well.
Okay, let's give it a try. Let's hang on as long as people will.
Okay. Well, there was one aspect of your notes here that said your confidence level in faith is 90%. So I'm wondering, you mentioned the contingency and the cosmological argument. Is faith a factor here? Or I'm not sure why that was, you didn't mention that at all, but I don't want to foist anything on you.
That's just what the caller screener said. What percentage are you? And I said 90%, whatever. It's not really a big
deal. Oh, okay. You're 90% confident that these are good reasons.
I think the arguments from contingency and like the Kalam cosmological arguments are pretty good arguments.
Okay, here's my question to you: when did you discover these arguments? Like, what year?
I don't know what year, but obviously, you know, I've looked on, you know, YouTube. I've followed guys like Ed Fezzer and William Lane Craig, and I know atheists not fans of William Lane Craig, but. Yeah.
Here's my question. Okay. Were you less confident God was real before you discovered these arguments? Did these boost your confidence in the claim that God was real?
I think the arguments lead to God's existence, yes. But okay. I was probably an agnostic most of my life.
Mm-hmm. Then in that case, just for anyone listening, this would be something that we'd want to explore with Joe, because it seems like it's a spoke in his wheel for contributing to his confidence. Now, if he had said, well, no, I was always 90%, then there's probably something else boosting it. So, but I have to, I don't know, Jenna, if this is something that you want to proceed on, or were we wrapping it up? I don't want to step on your toes here.
Well, I'd say I haven't heard anything about we have to stop right now. So let's go ahead and see how far we can go. Maybe you'll give it a couple minutes.
Okay.
Fire away.
Yes. So of those two, let's pick one just in the interest of time. Like, which one do you think?
Okay. Contingency is fine. I mean, the fact that I don't think we can have an infinite regress of events going backwards forever. That leads to something which is eternal.
Mm-hmm. How are you with saying, I don't know, when it comes to that question? Do you feel that you have to give an answer to that? Like, are you comfortable sitting on the fence until there's...
Of course, you can say, I don't know for anything. I mean, we could say, I don't know, you know, for lots of things, but I think...
Why are you not saying, I don't know, to that question?
I think that you cannot have an infinite regress of events is pretty... I think we know that. I think just by basic logic.
It seems intuitive. It does seem intuitive. But then again, there are a lot of things that seem intuitive that when we start gathering more evidence, we've discovered that maybe... that we were mistaken on it. So is there any evidence that might back up your view that that's a good reason to think that a God is real? Or are you saying that, well, I just can't imagine it being any other way, so therefore I'm on good footing? Are you saying that or something else?
That's not what I'm saying.
Okay.
Do you think we can have an infinite set of events before now?
Infinite set of events.
I don't know.
One by one.
I'm not sure. I don't know. And I don't know if I could rule out natural explanations for a start. Like maybe it could naturally be the case that there's a natural explanation of that first cause. So,
well, there can't be.
But I'm not advocating that that's the answer. I'm not saying I'm 90% sure that there's no God, because I just can't imagine there not being a natural cause for it. Do you follow me? But it seems like you are saying that you just can't imagine it any other way. Therefore, you're on good footing to be 90% sure.
No, I didn't say that at all. I think I'm just talking about the impossibility of an infinite set of events before now. That's all
It seems impossible, but are we justified in saying that it is impossible?
Is it possible to count to infinity? That's impossible, right?
That's a whole different question.
It's the same thing. I mean, you cannot cross an infinite set of events. It goes forever.
Cross?
Yes. If there's an infinite regress of events, that means you would have to traverse an infinite set of events, right?
Well, I'm not saying that there is an infinite set of events. You're the one that's saying that, if I'm following you correctly.
Yeah, I'm saying it's impossible. That means there was a first cause, correct?
I don't know.
Okay. Well,
I'm not trying to be difficult. I'm trying to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't know the answer to it. And it's tempting to think that I do have the answer, because I just can't imagine it being any other way. It's one of those risks that we have to watch out for, that our brains don't jump to conclusions and settle on things that seem like they make the most sense.
Right. I'm inclined to say, no, that's impossible too, but I don't know.
Yeah. And we're not trying to be obscurantist or difficulty or get in... throw sand in the gears here, but it just seems like until we can really understand what's happening, we have to be undecided about it. That seems to be the most honest position to be.
I disagree. I think there's obviously things we can be undecided about. I just think it's pretty obvious that I think we can say I don't know till the cows, forever. It's pretty obvious logically that we cannot cross an infinite set of events to get to.
Well, but do you think that it's dishonest? Because what you said you disagree with is that it's dishonest. When we don't know, you think that it's a better option to say that we do know when we don't?
But I think you can say you don't know. I mean, I know that you can't cross an infinite set of events.
But we don't know.
I think.
Okay, let's go. Let's let's just maybe for the purpose of this call, grant you that premise. How do we get to a God? How are you ruling out a natural explanation for a first cause?
A natural explanation. So there can't.
How did you exclude it?
Define natural. What does that mean, natural?
Well, that's a good question. Something observable in the material universe, I suppose. Something tangible and observable. I should probably look up that word.
Are you a materialist?
I don't know what those labels mean.
Yeah, we don't need to pull out labels.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, but here's my question. How did you exclude that a first cause couldn't have naturally occurred? Because that's the sense that I'm getting, that is your position, that you've excluded it. You've ruled it out. It's impossible that the first cause could have been natural. And I'm wondering how you excluded it.
Well, the first cause couldn't logically come from nothing, right? You would agree with that, wouldn't you?
I don't know.
Why would we say that?
Well, the first cause, you know, it's an event that happened. So it had to come from something. Something had to cause the first event.
Maybe.
We don't even, honestly, we don't really know that there was a first cause. Like there could have just been always something.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
We're just saying we don't know. But we're not here to talk about what we think. We'd like to figure out what you think, but it sounds like you just want to talk about what we think.
I'm telling you logically, there cannot be an infinite set of events. You say, I don't know. Then I say, okay, well, and then you're saying, okay, it's natural. And I say, okay, well, the first event can't cause itself, right?
Well, I think we were, at least I was giving you, acknowledging that let's say that there is a first event, a first cause. I feel like I'm repeating myself here. How are you ruling out some other explanation than it had to be a, I think that's what you're saying, right? There's a super.
So when you say that it's something that we just know, if there is anything that I know, let's say, for example, I know that I am sitting down, and how do I know that I am sitting down? I can look, I can feel it. I can verify that I am sitting down. How can we verify what we just know? That the universe was caused. How can we check? That's the question. Because there's anything else that's true, anything else that I can say that I know, I can verify.
Okay, there are logical impossibilities, right? Logical contradictions.
Okay.
I think
that this is a good time to wrap up the call.
Okay. Yeah, this is
logical contradiction to cross an infinite set of events. That's a logical contradiction. So, yeah, we can know things like that we see and touch, and you know, I'm just making an argument for why God exists or why I think God is the best explanation for the beginning of existence at all.
I understand and I appreciate that, and I'm sorry that we weren't more helpful, but unfortunately you were the last caller and we didn't have all the time in the world to offer you. So maybe you can call back next time and we can start with talking about that. We can start talking about was it logical contradiction? And I think Matt would also be a good guy to talk to.
All right. Thanks for the call.
Yes. One last question.
I was just wondering, is Anthony ever skeptical about atheism?
If Anthony is skeptical about atheism.
Well, atheism, as I define it, is the belief that there are no gods, which is a controversial definition, especially I understand in this venue, or not being convinced that there's a God. Yeah, I'm skeptical of my own position on pretty much everything, including that one. Yeah, I'm not 100% sure that there are no gods, if that helps clarify things.
All right, thank you.
Yeah, that's fine.
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you, Joe.
Hopefully we can talk again soon. And that's it.
That was fun. Thank you for having me on.
We had an SE kind of day, took a little bit slower than normal, and I think that we've made some progress. We've got a couple people that are questioning, and one person said that this is the third time they've called. I think it was Mark.
Nice.
So
repeat,
I think that's
callers.
Yeah, that's a good sign.
That's pretty good. Can I plug something real quick before we
Please.
Okay. We have the Street Epistemology website, which has lots of resources. Oh, there we go. Thank you.
Yeah.
Look at that graphic. I made that. My graphic design skills are kind of lacking. But anyways, we have a Discord server where you can go to engage with people who are critics of this approach, they love it, everything in between. There are training sessions that people from around the world are conducting. There's live SE conversations that you can observe at the Discord server. More than likely, somebody will drop a link to that in the video, please. Reddit is pretty active. Of course, YouTube, you can watch people using this approach with mainly with strangers on the street, but I'd like to see more familiar interactions, people that you're more familiar with, and then Facebook as well. So search for street epistemology on your favorite platform and you'll find people who are working to develop this further. And then finally, there's a multinational effort to develop a self-directed course on street epistemology so that you can go to the website, you can teach yourself how to do this approach on any claim, political, religious, otherwise. And I'm eager to see this start working its way into the culture. That's really where I want to see this move to. And it needs to move beyond atheism. It's great for exploring theistic claims, but we have so much further to go. And it was really great to be on the show with you, Jenna. I love being on with you. Thank you for having me on your show.
Thank you for joining me and being available and being awesome. Hopefully anybody that's struggling right now, I hope that you know that you can go to Recovering From Religion for help, and it's free. And there's always somebody on the phone that can talk to you just as a peer support line. And one last thing is we cannot forget the amazing crew and crew.
They
cats
are amazing. They've
and
been working
crew dog.
Behind the scenes for hours making this happen.
We've got a crew dog.
We really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you all so much. And thank you all for watching and sharing this and questioning and being awesome. Thanks, y'all.
Love you. Bye.